Good evening. Welcome to Congressman Capuano's telephone community meeting. My name is Allison, and I'll be moderating tonight's discussion. We thank you all for joining us tonight. If you would like to ask Congressman Capuano a question, please just press star 3 to begin that process. At some point, hopefully later this week, we will post an audio file of tonight's discussion on our website. To access that file, or to sign up for Congressman Capuano's electronic newsletter, please visit our website at www.house.gov/Capuano. If you do have a question for Congressman Capuano tonight, please press star 3. And with that, I'd like to turn the meeting over to Congressman Capuano, who would like to make a few opening remarks. Congressman, whenever you're ready.
Thanks, Allison. First of all, I just want to welcome everybody who's on the line tonight. I hope you will have some fun and enjoy this and hopefully find it educational, and hopefully we'll have a nice discussion on the important issues of the day. Basically, I just want to start out by telling everybody that we are in the last week before the Memorial Day break, where most members of Congress go home. I will be spending the entire time in Massachusetts with my family and trying to catch up with them, and also trying to catch up with all the meetings that I can't do when I'm in Washington. In this week, we have several important bills before us. Just tonight, I just came back. It's one of the reasons we're running a few minutes late. Came back from voting for a couple of bills, one of which included the Fraud Enforcement and Recovery Act of 2009 that will help some of the people who've been hurt by some of, particularly the financial services fraud that's happened, to be able to recover a little bit more quickly. Other issues we're dealing with this week is a homeowner rescue plan, trying to help people who are having mortgage difficulties, a bill relative to some small business loan assistance, the reauthorization for the FAA, and reauthorization for the Transportation Security Administration. Those are the major issues. The Senate still has a couple of bills. I don't think they'll be able to get them back to us this week, but we're hoping on the credit card issues, trying to make it a little bit easier for people to hold credit cards, trying to stop some of the more difficult and more aggressive tactics that the card companies have taken. Those are the major issues. I think most everybody understands that the economy is still issue number one. We are still trying to address that on a regular basis. And until that gets done, a lot of other issues will take second place. But I want people to understand that that does not mean we cannot do two things at once, or at least can have several different discussions going on. I think it's important and good that we are engaged in the discussion on trying what we can do about the environment, and that we are engaged in the discussion about what we can do about health care. Both those issues are important, very important, and I believe that it's possible that we can get to both of them this year. They will be both difficult to reach consensus on. Nonetheless, I have faith that we will be able to make some progress and maybe get some bills passed, and maybe begin the process of making this country a little bit more caring about all of our friends and family and neighbors and everybody who lives in this country. With that, I think I'm going to stop, and hopefully those of you who have questions would be more than happy to ask them. I'll try to answer everything I can. If we get too many people who want to ask questions, what we'll do is at the end of this conversation, we will allow you to go into a voicemail type of thing, and we will get back to you with answers as best we can. And as Allison said, this discussion will be posted on our website within a day or two. It usually takes a couple of days to get the transcription and the like, along with those questions and answers. So with that, I think I'm going to stop my little intro remarks and try to address the issues that might be on your minds.
Okay, and a reminder for those of you who might just be joining us now, if you do have a question for Congressman Capuano, please press star 3 to begin that process. And we will take our first call from Adele from Boston, who would like to talk with the congressman about the environment. Adele, whenever you're ready, your question.
February, and we are in Fidelity Puritan.
Adele, are you? Your question for Congressman Capuano?
Okay. Most of it is sent out to California.
I think we have losing Adele. Apologies. Okay, we will move on to our next caller. Sorry, Adele, that we weren't able to get to you. Please feel free to check back in. We will now take a question from Lokita from Boston. Lokita, whenever you're ready, your question for Congressman Capuano.
Well, thank you. Yes, I recognize my question is can be considered small in the scheme of things with the economy and so forth, but nonetheless, I'm interested in knowing. I'm currently in a neighborhood that overlaps. I'm in the High Park District, however, it's in a zone that is overlapping with Mattapan, but nonetheless, the post office will not change the zip code to align with where we actually live. Hence, that affects our personal economy of the community that I live in with insurance rates and so forth and so on. Can that be rectified?
Sometimes. We've dealt with the post office on a couple of these types of things, all ranging from different concerns for different neighborhoods. And we deal with them. The problem is trying to get them to change. It is difficult. We've had some luck on occasion, but it's usually when there's a natural geographic boundary that defines a neighborhood. If it's simply because somebody doesn't want to live in an area called X today, they want to live in an area called B tomorrow, the post office is reluctant to do that. Otherwise, it'd be changing those things every day all across the country. But generally, it depends on population shifts, if the population has shifted since they first came up with the zip code, or if there's a natural boundary that might have been not recognized before or might have actually occurred now. So it depends on the neighborhood. I can't speak to this specific one because I'd have to know more about it. But I can tell you that it can be done, but it is difficult.
Okay. Now we have a question from Marcia from Roxbury, who has a question about some education bills. Marcia, whenever you're ready, your question for the congressman?
Yes. There is a program that has been working in the state, and because of funding, our program might be cut. It is a generations program. It allows seniors to go into the schools and bring the reading levels of young people up at least, if not a grade level. And it has been working, and has been working for at least, I would say, 5 years that I know of. Now, we have been told that funds might be cut. Last year, we all took a month, 30 days, pay cut. Nobody left the program. We worked for 30 days without a dime for car fare, for any. A lot of them used the ride to get to the schools to work with the children. It's Bill 7002 and 7003. Please fight to keep the program going.
Marsha, is that a federal program or a state program? You know?
It's your state program right here.
That's what I thought. I'm familiar with the program, and I think it's a fantastic program. I totally agree with you. It's well worth a fight. As a state issue, though, I'm sure you're very familiar. I'm sure, having taken 3 days off last year, you know it intimately. The state has some major budgetary problems, like all states do. And Massachusetts is no different than any other state in the country. What the federal government tried to do, we did do it. We had the stimulus bill that was passed a few months ago contained billions of dollars for the states and cities and towns to be able to try to maintain some of their job levels. What happened is, in order to make a compromise in the Senate, they had to cut the amounts of money that passed in the House in half. So it went from, I'm not sure the exact number for Massachusetts, but it was, $1 billion is what they ended up getting. They would have gotten two. I'm not sure the exact numbers, but something like that. Had they gotten that extra money, programs like this probably would not be in jeopardy. There'd still be some tight times, but at least for the short term, for 1 year, most everything could have been put on hold. Unfortunately, we couldn't get that passed in the Senate. We did get it passed in the House. And in the Senate, because of the way they vote over there, we needed to make some compromises with so-called moderate Republicans. And they decided that that was not a worthy use of taxpayer dollars. And so it got cut. So right now, the state is kind of where it's going to be. They know how much money they're getting from the federal government, what it can be used for. And they're in the process of trying to deal with their own issues in the middle of their budget. Certainly, this is one program, like many, that deserve our support. And unfortunately, in government, if you want programs, you have to be willing to pay taxes. There's just no two ways around it. I know that some of the radio talk shows want to push, make it sound like everything is waste, fraud, and abuse. And I'm not going to say there's not some of that. Of course there is. But at the same time, it's not to the amounts of money that some of the talking heads would have you believe. These kinds of programs are in jeopardy. I'm glad you brought it up, Marcia. Again, it's not something on the federal level, but it's something that I certainly support, and I will do whatever I can do to try to make sure that it gets funded.
Okay, and if you're just joining us and you would like to ask Congressman Capuano a question, just press *3 to begin that process. We'll take a call now from Kay from Boston, who has a question about the Social Security Fairness Act. Kay, whenever you're ready.
I'm here. I'm asking about the Social Security Fairness Act. I understand it's been in committee for approximately 2 years, that John Kerry is head of that committee, and I'm wondering what you know about it and when you think it would come out of committee.
Which one is the Social? Could you explain the bill to me a little bit, Kay? I don't know it by title.
Certainly. It's, I'll give an example. I'm a state worker. I joined the state after I qualified for Social Security.
Okay. I know the issue very well.
You do? Okay. When I retire, they're going to deduct a certain amount, even though I had earned everything before I joined the state. With the economy the way it is, with our deferred comp the way it is, and it's been in committee for 2 years, I really, really would love to see it pass because I'm getting ready to retire, and we need every penny we can get.
Just as a point of interest, you may or may not know this, Kay. It's been in committee for longer than that. Bill that did this passed before I got into Congress, and I didn't know much about it. But I learned right away, and number one is when it comes my time to retire, I'm in the exact same situation. I was a city employee for a long time, and now I'm a federal employee paying Social Security, and I'm going to have the exact same thing happen to me. So I am intimately familiar with the issue. And it is one of the most unfair things I've ever seen. Anyone else who paid into two different retirement systems, whatever they might be, would be eligible for both retirements. No one would even question that. If you work 5 years for one entity and then 5 years for another, you're entitled to take out of that system. This is the only situation I know of in the entire country where people that have paid in their fair share into a retirement system as required by law and lived up to all their commitments are now going to have to pay a penalty for it. And it happened. I don't know how it passed, but I can tell you that it only affects about 20 states. And that's the problem. Excuse me. And what's happening now? Excuse me, one second. Sorry. What's happening now is we're trying to get that changed, and the problem is because it's been that way for so long, it is a huge expense to the federal government now. My argument is fairness is fairness, and you shouldn't worry about that. Unfortunately, right now, we do not have enough votes in the Senate or the House to pass that bill, so people like me have to keep pushing, and people like you have to keep pushing us, Kay, but I can only tell you that I will tell you unequivocally that every single member of the Massachusetts delegation, House and Senate, is 100% with you, and we're going to just keep pushing as best we can.
Okay, we now have a question from Marcia from Boston, who would like to ask about the climate change bill. Marcia, when you're ready.
I'm ready. Oh, thank you, Congressman. I'm very grateful for you doing this online, on the phone interview. I just wanted to encourage you, and I'm sure you would do it anyway, I think we should support the Waxman-Markey bill, even if it's not perfect. It is such a big change on improving the U.S. response to climate change, and I'm sure that you would probably be in support of
very
it
much,
anyway.
Very much so, but here's the politics of it. At the moment, most of us think that that bill is the high watermark. We will never get that bill because there aren't enough votes for it.
Wow.
Ed Markey is the leader on this. He's spending, I will tell you, I just saw him on the floor. I know he's spending every minute of every day trying to work with different members, trying to get us to a majority vote in the House. And in order to do that, one step at a time, you have to make compromise with people, which makes the bill, from my perspective, and I'm sure from Ed's too, but I won't speak for him, just a little bit less good. The question is, how many deals do we have to make to get to 218 votes in the House? And then what happens in the Senate? And that can't be answered yet until we get there. Eddie is killing himself on this, and I do believe that we will be able to make progress. I don't think we're going to get the bill as written, but I do think that we'll make some significant, measurable progress. This is the year to do it. I think most Americans accept that. And I think that for those people who want to stand in the way of that progress, I think that they will be taking their political careers in jeopardy, which is a good thing. I think the American people want this, and certainly they deserve it. So I think we're going to make progress, but I don't want people to be misled or to think that somehow we're going to be able to do it without making compromises. We will have to make some, and it's going to have to. We have to wait for a little while to see exactly how much we have to make.
We now have a question from Montiel from Boston, who would like to ask about road maintenance and the gas tax. Whenever you're ready, Montiel.
Yes. It was my understanding that there was a federal tax on gasoline that was supposed to be spent on roads. And I can tell you, I don't think I have to because you drive around here, that the roads are not in the very best of shape. So I'd like to know what's happening about that. And the other question I had regarded the people who direct traffic at the airports. I just heard that they are being forced to retire. It's mandatory that they retire very soon, and there are no people to take their place. So I wondered what was happening with that.
Okay. Let me answer the second one first because it's a little easier. There is a mandatory retirement age for air traffic controllers, and when you reach that age, you are required to retire because that job is a very high-pressure job. And a long time ago, it was decided that it was best for all of everybody in the flying public to have certain requirements, and age was one of them. I would argue the age might be a little too low, but that's a minor item. The problem has been that we have not, that up until now, when George Bush was the president, he refused to put any money in the budget to hire new people to come in. So every day that goes by, we lose people. And many of the people, just as a point of information, this job it pays compared to what most people make. At the same time, the job is such high pressure that only a very small percentage, less than 5% of the people who are eligible to get to, I think it's age 57, I think it is, before they're required to retire, almost less than 5% of people ever reach that age. They retire sooner than that because it's just not worth them coming in. They figure their health is too important, and they go and find another career. So we're trying to get that done. I think that with President Obama, he's already talked about getting a mandatory arbitration going relative to how to get this back on track. And I have real faith that we'll be able to get that done. As far as the roads and the gas tax, there is a federal gas tax. It's 18 cents a gallon, a little bit more than 18.2. And that money is put into a trust fund, and it is used for highways, roads, bridges, things like that. And it is used. In Massachusetts, it gets used all the time. Whenever you see a bridge or a road getting fixed, especially a state one, even if it's only resurfacing, that is your gas tax at work. The widening of Route 3 was federal gas tax paid. The intersection at the Bourne Bridge, again, federal taxes. Obviously, the Big Dig is the biggest one, but it's not the only one. The Longfellow Bridge in Boston is being paid for with federal money. The Sterrow Drive Underpass, and on and on and on. So most of the construction on major roads is funded with federal money. The problem is that for pretty obvious reasons, number one, the cost of construction goes up. Number two, most of us are driving less. Number three, most of us are buying cars that are more fuel efficient. So the gas tax, as it is, it's a flat tax. It doesn't matter what the cost of gas is. It's 18 cents if gas costs $2 a gallon or if it costs $15 a gallon. So the money doesn't go up. The inflation goes up. Cost of construction goes up. And this has been in place now for, I believe it's well over 15 years. I'm not sure the exact date, but something like that. And the problem is, like everything else, inflation's caught up with it. It doesn't go as far as it used to, and we cannot fund all the work that we need to get done. And that's why some of us think that we have to come up with more money if we want to fix our roads and bridges, which I do. And that's obviously a very difficult proposal to make. A lot of people just don't want to hear it. And I don't know where they think we're going to get the money to fix the roads and the bridges and to build the subways and improve the subways and the buses. That's where this money comes from, and there's no other place that it comes from. So if we want those things, which I think we do, I do, I certainly want safe bridges, then I think we're going to have to address this sometime in the near future.
We now have Jovita from Boston, who has a question about small business loans and the stimulus package. Jovita, when you're ready, your question for the congressman.
Hi, Congressman. It's Jovita from the South End.
Hi, Jovita.
Hi, how are you? I think this is a great idea. Somebody else said the same thing, and congratulations to you on your commencement speech at the university. I'm wondering about the new regulations for the SBA loans for small businesses out of the stimulus plan, and if you have any idea when the regulations are going to have some legs to it and the money out on the street.
Right.
And this is the loans that the government is guaranteeing banks I think it's up to 90%.
Right. Well, that's being worked on right now. That was part of the, there's two things going on. That was part of the stimulus package, and again, we have to have people that are eligible for it and to get that money out. And there's still a process. So that money is beginning to go out now, but it's taking longer than most of us wanted. We also have the Small Business Act, which is being amended this week. That'll increase some of the loan assistance, particularly hopefully reaching out to veterans, Native Americans, and other minority groups. And hopefully that bill will be passed for the House this week and maybe get to the Senate next week. So between the two of them, in theory, we hope, that's the idea, is that we'll be able to get some of this money, a lot of this money, into the hands of people who, you know, they're not the big fat cats. They do provide lots of jobs, and they do provide a lot to this economy, and that's the idea. So my hope is that at least the House will get our bill through this week. As far as the stimulus goes, that money is working through the process both in the federal and the local level. And I believe that some of it's already going to get out to the street, but I believe that you're going to start seeing a lot more of it in the next maybe two to four months.
We now have a question from Florence, who would like to talk about the Silver Line. Florence, whenever you're ready.
Yes. Congressman Capuano, I just was wondering, there are conflicting reports about the Silver Line, that it is on the back burner because of the financial situation of the MBTA, and I live in Boston. I walk by Boylston and Arlington Street every day, and I walk by the Copley Square construction with the MBTA every day. Some days there are people working. A lot of days people are not working, and it seems to me that we should finish what has been started before they start digging a tunnel under Charles Street South.
Well, first of all, that will be done. The one, particularly the one on Arlington Street, is way over time. That was supposed to be done at least a year ago. It's ridiculous how long it's taken. But that's beside the point. I mean, that will be done well before the Silver Line ever even gets thought of. And the Silver Line is on its deathbed. Not the Silver Line, but the Silver Line Tunnel, I think, is what you're talking about specifically, because there are other aspects of the Silver Line that are still moving forward. But the tunnel, the proposed tunnel that would pass up Charles Street and then take a right onto Boylston and head down to the South Station, that's probably not going to happen probably in my lifetime at this point, mostly because of the amounts of money that it costs. And I know that there's some controversy about it. I know some people don't want it, and some people do, and some people want fixed rail. I understand all those things, but every one of those aspects costs money. And the last number I saw, I don't remember the exact number, but the approximate cost of that tunnel was about $1 billion. And there's now a fair debate as to whether that is that's the best way we can use $1 billion on the subways. And right now the answer is probably not. The MBTA hasn't got the money, and if it does, it has other projects that will probably service more people in a manner that would be more appropriate, more environmentally friendly, more supported by different neighborhoods. So that I can't tell you it's dead yet, Florence. It's not completely dead, but it's on its deathbed, and I certainly don't see it any time in the near future where it's going to come back.
Okay, we now have a question from Derek from Boston, who would like to talk about FAA funding. Derek, when you're ready, your question for the congressman.
Yeah, I'd like to understand your position on user fees and the FAA funding bill.
Well, there are user fees already. You mean user fees relative to getting on a plane?
No, user fees for private pilots landing and taking off at airports.
Well, they're already landing fees now. I mean, so that they're already there. They've been in place forever, for a long time. The FAA, there's always proposals on everything to raise things, lower things, move them around. The FAA reauthorization bill is up this week. I don't think there's going to be any significant change on if you're talking general aviation, it probably won't happen. There's a lot of people that want to leave it just the way it is, and that's probably what's going to end up. That's part of the compromise, the big compromise from a lot of people, and that's probably the way it's going to be. There is talk about increasing some of the passenger fees. That we again trying to those monies go to fixing up the airports all across the country to make them a little bit more user friendly and more useful. That is on the table, and that probably will happen. I don't think that the landing fees relative to GA in particular will change at all.
Now we have a question from Jamila from Boston, who would like to talk about financial aid issues.
Yes, good evening. Yes. Good evening. And I actually am calling because I'm a full-time teacher as well as a full-time graduate student. And so I'm getting hit in both areas with this economy. So I just wanted to know if there's any discussion on decreasing the amount of federal aid or any aid at this point going to college and graduate students.
Decreasing it?
Yes. Or any changes whatsoever.
There's talk. We're trying to find ways to increase it. I'm not aware of anybody in their right mind trying to find ways to decrease it. I guess there's always somebody, but that's certainly not the widespread discussion here. Most everybody I talk to, we're trying to find ways to increase the aid to students. We think, I think it's the majority position that society is better off with an educated population, and therefore the more people we can help get a higher level of education, the better off this whole country will be. The individual certainly will be, but so will the country. So that I think most of us are trying to find ways to increase aid to students, not decrease it.
Okay, and just a reminder, if you do have a question for Congressman Capuano, press *3 to begin that process, and we will post an audio file of tonight's discussion on our website, hopefully by the end of this week. And we now have a call from Barbara from Boston, who has a question about gay and lesbian support. Barbara, whenever you're ready.
Hi, Congressman.
Hi.
Hi, Congressman. Wonderful idea doing this.
Thank you.
I didn't support you when you first ran because I thought you might be conservative and not supportive of gay and lesbian issues. Well, I couldn't have been more wrong. And what I want to know is what you think the prospects are in Congress for the three major concerns I have. The hate crimes bill, overturning DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, and ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy in the military.
Well, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell is going to be, at the moment, it's on the president's agenda. I don't know what he'll do with it. I know there's been some back and forth. I don't know where he is at the moment. Hate crimes bill we just passed in the House, might have been just last week or the week before. I'm not sure exactly when it was. I don't know whether it'll pass in the Senate. As far as overturning DOMA, I don't hold a whole lot of hope out for this right now. Congress is always behind the public, I believe. And I believe that what's been happening in New England and in Iowa and other states, and I think what will happen in California next year, people recognizing that gay rights are not dangerous to the rest of society. I believe that one step at a time, we will slowly change opinions here in Washington. I regret to tell you that at the moment, Barbara, I don't think those opinions have changed that much in Washington yet. They are getting better, but they're not where they need to be. So we still have a lot of work ahead of us, and I think that the honest truth is the most likelihood of successes are in the individual states to make some progresses there. It doesn't mean we're not going to stop the fight here. We're going to keep the fight going, but I can't lie to you and tell you that I have a whole lot of hope that all of a sudden my colleagues are going to become enlightened in an overwhelming number. But I do believe that we've made progress, and I do believe we will continue to do so.
Okay, we now have Driff from Boston, who has a question about the president's refinancing program. Driff, when you're ready.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you, Congressman. I have one question. I am in the middle of a dispute with Citibank, City Mortgage. I've been paying my mortgage the current. My loan is owned by Freddie Mac. I have the only house. So basically the four criteria that you're supposed to be eligible for refinance, I haven't. My score on my wife's FICO score is over 800. No debt. I mean, it's the perfect. I never been late in my payment, and yet they didn't want to refinance my mortgage, and they said they still don't understand Obama's program that was out on February with regard to helping people to refinance, and lately he even insists that people take advantage. And I locked up the rate. I have a rate right now, 575. I locked out the 487, and yet they didn't want to refinance. The only thing they said, my house went down on the appraisal, 30,000, but I still owe less what the house value. So if you look at the program, it has four criteria, four factors. You have to be the owner of one, to four houses. You have to be either Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae, and you have to be current, and your value of your house has to be equal or little less than the loan. My value is way higher, and I'm still fighting them for 2 months now.
The program you're talking about is a proposal by the president that the House has passed and the Senate has not passed yet, so it is not law yet, and that's part of the problem. At the same time, it's not law yet, no, because it doesn't work that way. We have to get it through Congress and then to the president's desk. If we can get it through the Senate, the president certainly will sign it. And actually, we've made a lot of improvements to that bill as well. But at the same time, from what you're telling me, it certainly doesn't. It doesn't add up. That doesn't make much sense. What I would suggest you, though, Drift, is why don't you give my office a call tomorrow, and we'll see if we can, because you're talking about some specific things that are very personal to your situation, and this probably isn't the best place to get into them. So why don't you give the office a call tomorrow at 617-621-6208, and maybe we can walk through a little bit more detail on your specific issues.
Okay, we now have Pat from Boston, who has a question for the congressman about global health funding. Pat, when you're ready.
Thank you, Congressman. First, I want to begin to congratulate you on your unbelievable commencement address yesterday at BU. You really faced any opponents head on, and you did a phenomenal job. So I'm very proud, and I'm happy for you. I actually work for Physicians for Human Rights, and I don't know if you're familiar with our group. We work on Darfur. We work on global health. So I have a couple questions for you. One is, on Wednesday, the foreign policy priorities hearing is going to be held, and Senator Clinton is going to be testifying in front of Kerry. And I'm wondering if you would be willing to sort of ask Kerry to raise the issues of both Darfur. And I know your commitment to that issue is huge, but also on the broader issues of global health specific to PEPFAR. So would love to hear your comments on where you think we're going in regard to global health and also the DEFRN issue. Thank you.
I think that's a great idea. I don't serve in the Senate, so I didn't know exactly what was going on over there this week. I'm kind of busy over here. I'm happy to talk to Senator Kerry. I think that's a great idea. And plus, I will tell you that he's been great on the issue, and Secretary Clinton has been great on the issue. They've already appointed a special envoy for the region of Sudan and Darfur. So I think that was a great signal to all of us who care about it. By the way, I also want to make sure that you understand very clearly. I know the Physicians for Human Rights. You guys do a great job. I can't tell you how proud I am of the work that you guys do. As far as the rest of global health, I guess it's more on faith than it is anything substantive. But I firmly believe that President Obama's administration will maintain a commitment to worldwide health issues, if not increase it. Let's be serious. I mean, what was the last health scare we had? It didn't start in Mattapan. It started in Mexico. The one before that started in China. I mean, international health care issues are important. And as the richest country in the history of the world, even though we don't feel it right now, but we still are, as the richest country in the history of the world, I think we have some moral obligations to our fellow human beings to do something to improve their health. We can't do everything, but we should continue doing something as best we can. So again, it's not based on any substantive knowledge or any concrete discussions. But I feel comfortable believing that the commitment to international healthcare issues is still there, and I actually think it'll grow. So I wish I had a more concrete answer for you. That I talked to the president, and he said this, but I haven't. But I feel pretty comfortable about it, Pat, and I think we're going to be okay.
We now have Susan from Dorchester, who has a question about funding for the arts. Susan, whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you very much. I think this is a wonderful idea. And I wanted to say first that I think I read recently that you were supporting a human rights proposal to not deport people back to Haiti. And I want to thank you for that. And so the other is I run a small arts nonprofit. I'm the executive director. And I just wanted to remind you that arts organizations are small businesses that have an extraordinary multiplier effect in our communities. And I know that sometimes some of the maybe more conservative legislators from other places find the arts to be an easy whipping boy. But I think it's important for a place like the Boston area in Massachusetts, as such an important cultural leader, to help keep those strong.
I couldn't agree with you more, Susan. During the debate on the stimulus, it really bothered me when some of my more conservative, it's not even conservative, I don't think it's conservative, but more right-wing in this case, colleagues, they succeeded in cutting in saying that art issues were not eligible for stimulus money. And I think it was ridiculous. It's exactly what you just said. It wasn't money for art just for the sake of art, because we love beautiful art. It was because almost every artist I know is borderline poor, if at best middle class. I mean, I'm sure there's some wealthy artists around somewhere, but I haven't met them. Most people I know in the arts are working every day just to make ends meet like everybody else, and they're doing it in a manner that makes my life better, just a little bit more beautiful, a little bit more thoughtful, and a little bit more interesting. So I couldn't agree with you more. I actually wish, on some levels, I wish we had another word for it, because when you say the word art to some people, I don't know what they think, but I think in terms of business and employment and a more fulfilling life. So I can only tell you that I'm committed to it, but you're right. It is an easy whipping boy for some of my colleagues here, and I can only tell you that there are those of us who stand up, but sometimes we win. We win more than we lose, but we do lose on occasion, and I can only tell you we'll just keep the fight going.
Okay, we now have Rebecca from the Back Bay who has a question about the card check bill. Rebecca, whenever you're ready.
Hi, thank you. This is a great forum. Thank goodness for technology, huh?
I know, it's only a telephone.
I was very surprised to get the call, and I'm glad to join in. One of the things I've been thinking about, and I must confess I haven't done yet, is to write in to all the congressmen and Senate people and say that I am opposed to this card check bill. I worked in a hospital for 14 years, one of the big teaching hospitals. I have not worked there for many years. And I went through two union campaigns where the union was trying to get in. And there is the possibility of coercion and a lot of bullying from the union folks. And if that happens, people will be denied their right of the secret ballot and a vote that is their vote alone that no one else knows about. So, and this is based on what I at least know about the bill. So I just wanted to express that and say hope that you will consider that when you're working on it.
Appreciate it, Rebecca. It's a controversial issue. It's a bill that right now is probably not going anywhere this year. So there are all kinds of rooms for compromise. We'll see if the people are willing to compromise on this bill or not. But I do believe that the creation of unions helped build, if not, I won't say nothing individually did, but it was a very important factor in the building of the middle class. Prior to that, you had the rich and the poor, and that was it. So I think that the ability to have strong unions is generally a good thing for society as a whole, not just the union members. At the same time, I understand that some people have some concerns about this particular proposal. And one way or the other, this particular proposal this year seems to be dead. And so therefore, there's plenty of time to see if we can get some people at a table, see if we can keep this thing moving forward so that we can get someplace that is a little bit more mutually beneficial and mutually accepted by everybody. And I think we will probably be spending a year or so trying to do just that.
Okay, we now have a call from Rhonda, who has a question about the stimulus bill. Rhonda, when you're ready.
Yes, thank you, Congressman. I'm with Codman Academy Charter Public School, and as you know, with the Codman Square Health Center within which we're located, we're hoping to get federal stimulus funding to construct a joint addition to the existing health center structure, which would be jointly owned and occupied. And a lot of the details about the stimulus program are very, very vague still. First, we want to thank you for your efforts on our behalf. But I was wondering if you had any further intelligence in terms of when exactly the applications will be due, what percentage of total estimated costs will be the ceiling of the amount of funding that would be provided, and when announcements would be made in terms of who are the awardees. Thank you.
I can't answer any of those questions. I'm sorry, Rhonda. Those are all going to be decided by the state. The stimulus money and these things went to the state for them to make a decision. The Congress and it made a decision that there was not going to be anything, any earmarks or no specific input by Congress, so that it, all this money pretty much has gone to the state. Some of it goes through formula. Some of it goes just in general amounts of money. And in this case, it'll be the state that will make those decisions, and I can't answer those questions. I hope the answer is soon, because the intention was to try to get this money on the street as quickly as possible. And even if the answer is no, which I'm sure no one wants to hear the word no, but even if the word is no, at least give people an opportunity to go look for money someplace else, not just you. There's a lot of people trying to use some of the stimulus money to put people to work and improve the lives of our entire community. So I wish I could answer your question. I'm sorry that I cannot. But we're just going to keep pushing with the state to try to get them to finalize some answers.
Okay, we now have Rosalie from Boston who has a question about some human services funding cuts. Rosalie, when you're ready.
Yes. I'd like to join in with everybody who's congratulated you on your address yesterday.
Thank you.
I have supported you and voted for you in all elections, primary and the final. I want just to advocate for my severely to profoundly retarded son, Andy, who is 38 years old. He's been in full-time care since he was 5 years old. I'm getting concerned with the cuts that are going to be made, especially here in the state, to the Department of Mental Retardation, and he also does get federal funding as well. So I would just want to make you cognizant of the needs for looking out for our vulnerable citizens.
Very, 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 very much so, Rosalie. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, bottom line is that your family member is exactly the kind of people that I hope that our society is supposed to care about most. Those who have, for no choice of their own, have had a little bit more difficult road than most of us. And I can only tell you that I hope, I believe, that society, through their elected officials, but society wants to help families like yours. And I think there are plenty of us out here who continue to fight for that. I actually would think that this has to be one of the highest priorities there is, again, for the very simple reason I'm not aware that anyone has asked for it, for those difficulties, and I can't imagine that anyone would look the other way or put their hands in their pockets while some of our neighbors and family and friends have to suffer through that. So I can only tell you that I will do anything and everything I can for families like yours, Rosalie, and I hope that it works out best for you and for us as a society. I don't want to live in a place that turns its back on the most vulnerable members of our family, and I hope that we don't.
Okay, we now have a question from Zena from Dorchester who would like to talk about public schools and improving education. Zena?
Yes. Good evening, Congressman.
Hi, Zena. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm very appreciative of being on this call, listening to all the concern of my colleagues and friends of the city of Boston. With the improvement of children going to college, I am looking at even from kindergarten up to middle school and high school, and with no kids left behind, how are we trying to improve our schools? Because with the MCAS test, we had a program once that we decided that all kids should group together, like the kids, handicapped kids and special needs kids, with the regular kids. But we only had some schools that are designated to do the MCAS, to do the MCAS test. They didn't specialize. So the kids that are among the special needs with the regular kids, those schools are not doing good at the MCAS test. And I'm wondering what are they, if they're looking at it, and what are they doing to improve or make a difference?
Right. Well, most of the education, almost all the educational issues are decided on the state and local level. When we did No Child Left Behind, which, by the way, I voted against, but when we did that, it was part of the argument was whether the federal government would take those decisions away from the cities and towns and by the states, and the decision was no. And that's one of the things I actually supported in the bill. I think the last thing you want is the federal government telling you how to educate your children. You will end up in an education system that you will not like, I guarantee that. So therefore, we've left most of the decision. The federal government does send some money and does have some minimum standards, but that's really about it. The No Child Left Behind Act, you know, was a great title, but it really didn't do much to move the ball forward in education. The state government, it did, I think, a great job several years ago on some levels, and some levels I didn't agree with some of the things they did. But they did a decent job moving the ball forward relative to raising the bar. What they have not done yet, in my opinion, is try to address the real needs of children who might be a little bit more challenged than others. They've done a decent job with some charter schools. They've done a decent job keeping kids who are already motivated, well-motivated. They've done a decent job in making sure that we don't graduate. They've done a very good job making sure we don't graduate anyone who can't read or write anymore. Those days are over, and I think that's a good thing, a very good thing. At the same time, for the average child in the average public school, particularly in an urban area that has a lot of challenges of both multiple languages, different cultures, different socioeconomic backgrounds, they have done a mediocre job at best in trying to really address it, mainly because that is the hottest issue. That is a very, very tough issue to deal with. And they've finally gotten around to trying to figure out exactly what they want, but they're about to rewrite the MCAS tests all over again because they're not necessarily sure that it's testing the things that they want to test. So education is something that I will tell you, and I firmly believe you do not want it to decide on the federal level. It will not be good for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts or for your children. And I have some faith. I know that there are good people working on this, and I know that they're trying their best to keep addressing a difficult issue that, again, it's hard. My children are now out of school, but we went through it all during the MCAS stuff, and it is the best thing you can do for any child is for you to keep your eye on that individual child. That is the best thing you can do. The system will do their best it can, but it's still a system that has to deal with thousands of kids, and oftentimes you will feel that your child is not getting the attention they deserve. But that's up to the individual parent and guardian to make sure that child does. It generally works out more than it doesn't, but nonetheless, it's still a very difficult system.
Okay, it looks like we have time for just a couple more questions this evening, and if we do not get to your question, we apologize. There will be an opportunity to leave a voicemail for Congressman Capuano at the end of the telephone community meeting. And now we have Sarah from Cambridge who has a question about the Clean Energy Act. Sarah, when you're ready.
Yes, I know someone asked you, Representative Capuano, a little bit about this Energy Act before and was speaking strongly in favor of it. And I want to go a little bit further. I know that the entire Massachusetts delegation will vote in favor of it, but I'd like to see the Massachusetts delegation as a whole become leaders so that despite whatever compromises occur, that this bill has a lot of momentum and can reach the Senate more easily, because the real goal in my mind where we're dealing with a global climate issue is Copenhagen, so that we come to Copenhagen as leaders with a firm policy in hand. And again, I know it's going to be compromised and it won't be what either the left or the right wants completely, but I was wondering how I could help you and other citizens could help you really help this develop the political will for this to really become a force.
As you said, Sarah, I can't speak for everybody. I'm pretty confident that you're right, that the Mass delegation will stand up for this. I can tell you right now that the leading voice in Congress is Eddie Markey on this issue. So, you know, and on the Senate, it's John Kerry. So we're already taking a pretty good position. Many of us are working on a regular basis. Eddie and John are carrying the lion's share of this, and that's good. They share our values. I don't know that it'll be done in time for Copenhagen. I'd be surprised if it does. And I think, unfortunately, Sarah, it's the good thing and the bad thing about living in Massachusetts. The good thing is, on a regular basis, you will get the entire delegation agreeing in general on the direction we want to head. The bad thing is, of course, that when that happens, if you agree with them, I wish I could say, go get that Eddie Markey. He's not that good in this issue, but the truth is, he's the leader on it. So That's the good thing. So it's tough for a Massachusetts person on a regular basis, especially on this issue, to really make much more of a difference than it already is. What you can do best for me is to keep me educated as to what's going on, particularly as the compromises are made. I know a fair amount about the issue, but I can't possibly know it all. As these compromises get made and they come out, it's probably going to be a lot of fastballs zipping by. And the more help I can get to understand what the compromises are, to make a determination as to whether they're worth supporting or whether they're worthy of my opposition, the more input I get, the better off I'll be. So for me personally, I won't speak for anybody else, the best thing people can do is to keep me informed as the way they see it, particularly if they're deeply involved with the issue. This is true about any issue, but this one in particular. If they're deeply involved with the issue, because there are some things here that I don't fully understand, and I do have to do a lot of outreach to try to figure out exactly how it impacts Massachusetts, and is this compromise, is it too much, or is it can we accept it? So for me, that's the best that I can ask for is your insight as we move forward.
Okay, we now have Shirley from Hyde Park who has a question about empowerment zone funding. Shirley, when you're ready.
Good evening, Congressman, and thank you so much for this opportunity. Also want to congratulate you on your speech also on yesterday. Congressman, you've been very helpful to us in the past in terms of trying to move empowerment zone legislature and get, as you know, they are scheduled to end December 31st of this year, and you've led the way in trying to, on the House side, trying to get some monies reinstated for empowerment zones. I wondered if you could give me your idea about how you think that might fare.
It depends. It's a bipartisan coalition that wants these to move forward because they do such great work, and they do great work in areas that need the help. So I think we have a chance of it. Honestly, I haven't pushed the Obama administration just yet because they have to get their feet on the ground on 1,000 different things, and the time hasn't been right. But now that the appropriations season is coming upon us, that's when the time will be for us to really jump on them. Again, I don't know. It's hard to tell, but this will be mostly decided at HUD. And the new HUD secretary at least strikes me as somebody who understands these issues. It comes out of New York City, so therefore he should be somebody who understands them very well. And I don't know what's going to happen with them. I know that there's a lot of opposition to them, but that opposition, I think, is the minority voice. And that battle will really engage in the next couple of months. I haven't given up, and I think we're okay, we'll be in okay shape, but the truth is it's a little too early for me to really handicap it yet.
Okay, looks like we have time for just one more question. We do apologize if we could not get to your question, and please feel free to leave a message at the end of this meeting. And we'll take our last question from Marjorie from Boston, who has a question about funding for summer jobs. Marjorie, when you're ready.
Good evening, Congressman. I'd like to congratulate you on your speech yesterday. And my question is, I'm concerned about the youth. Has any money been earmarked for the youth for summer jobs for this year?
There are certain programs that have been. The answer is yes, but not near as much as, obviously you're interested in, but people like me, I totally agree with you. I think that it's one of the areas that's been overlooked a little bit. I don't think there's near enough money on the table for this, and I think this country is going to pay a little bit of a price for it. I hope it's not too bad, but in a tough time, it's the kids who get knocked out first for obvious reasons. There is money there, but not, in my opinion, with tough economic times the way they are, I don't think it's enough, and I think that it's going to cause some difficulties this summer all across this country.
All right, and with that, we need to end our community meeting. Thank you again very much for joining us. If we did not get to your question, please feel free to stay on the line and leave a message for Congressman Capuano. And I know he'd like to say a few closing remarks as well.
Well, I just want to thank everybody for joining us. I hope it was as much fun for you as it was for me. I love doing these things because it gets me in touch with regular people, and it also gets me to jump around on 1,000 different issues that are all important, and it tests me and keeps me on a sharp edge. So I have fun doing these things. I find them interesting and educational, and I hope everyone else did. For those of you who didn't get a chance to ask a question, if you were left in line, please leave a message for us, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. And for everyone else, I wish you a very good night, and thanks for participating.